back to the 90s, must you remind me?
The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
This is the key.
Welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. Welcome. Today's date is November the 18th, 2015. I want to thank you all for listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, David Wren, a.k.a. Dave from L.A., and got a live show for you today, so looking forward to it. And just before we do that, we got to take care of some of the business at hand. Hey, everyone, continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. Tell friends, tell family members. Really assist this network in growing, because in today's times, at these moments, we need this network so desperately, because someone needs to cut through all of the propaganda and the lies that we are told constantly by the mainstream media, and we need to break that spell, that curse that is upon our people from the correlated agenda of the few. So continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. Tell friends, tell family members. If you can make a financial donation, that would be great. That will help maintain the network. And believe me, I know that the network has blessed you, it has blessed me, and has given, we've been greatly received great fortune from it. And this is something that we have to definitely take care of to ensure that it will be here tomorrow, the next day, and for the generations at hand. So continue to support the network. Show your generosity by please supporting it to maintain that we have this network for in the future. Also, go to Tando Radio Show on Facebook. Check out what we have posted there. Check out the articles that we have posted there. Give you an idea of what the show is going to be about for the day. And also, if you have any questions or comments, by all means, you can place those, place it there, and I will definitely get to your questions and comments. Very important that we do that. So today's show, great show. Oh, but before we do that, let me just say this. Everyone, if you are still interested in the security business, opportunities that Dr. Alexander has in his business that's growing, definitely if you're interested in being a sales rep for the security business, then send me an email at wolf6pack1@gmail.com. And just put inside of their sales rep or distributor, receive some of the emails and appreciate that, and we'll definitely get back to you. If you're interested, if you have a professional service that you would like to offer to Dr. Alexander's business, and it'll be a collaboration between the two, if there's some services that are needed that you have that you know that could assist the business, definitely you want to have alliances and work together with that and forge a relationship, a business relationship that will benefit you and will benefit the overall development of GNA Securities. Also, if you are interested in investing, also send a email to me and just put investors. If you have a professional service business and you would like to assist the business that Dr. Anderson has with the security, then you can just put business service and tell me what your business service is and everything else. And then we will definitely get you on a conference call with Dr. Alexander. And what we're probably going to do is we're going to do the sales reps first. Then we'll do, I'm not quite sure which one we'll do after that, but I will definitely let you know. So Dr. Alexander is looking forward to it. And the opportunities are great. As you can see from all of the current events that are going on and what's happening, this business is going to take off in so, so many ways. Why don't you just get on board for a fully, completely Black-owned business and corporation that is international in nature, has does business throughout the world. It's so, so important, especially in today's time. So if you're interested in that, as I said before, send me an email at wolf, W-O-L-F, the number 6, pack, P-A-C-K, 1, at Gmail. Okay? So can do that. Also, tomorrow's show, lined up for tomorrow's show, I believe that we will have J.W. that will come on. J.W. is a embedded banker, has connections to high-level banking officials in the industry within banking and in securities, that is going to be into the market of securities. So that is going to be a very, very good show. Looking forward to the sister coming on. Very, very dynamic, powerful sister. And this one show you don't want to miss. We'll definitely post it inside of Tando Radio Show, and will be posted on Black Talk Network also. So tomorrow's show, looking forward to. We have someone that has very strategic information about some of the economic developments that you need to know about. And they're going to come on tomorrow to inform you. So if you have any questions or comments about those things, tomorrow would be a great time to hear from JW. And just be prepared. She's a very, very dynamic and powerful sister. So looking forward to that myself tomorrow. If it all goes well, if not, we'll still have a show. But Friday, we will not have a show. Have some things in moving. I have some people that I have to meet and say goodbye to. So starting to set up some of the saying goodbye to some of the people that have been great, the extended family that we've had here in Southern Cal. So I won't be able to have a show tomorrow. So, I mean, not tomorrow, Friday. So just to give you a heads up, there won't be a show on Tando on Friday. So let's get into, go to Tando Radio Show, and let's check out some of the postings that are there that we didn't get to yet, but very, very important that we do. Okay, we posted this yesterday. This comes from trueactivist.com. Really, really good article. When you kill 10 million Africans, you aren't called Hitler. Very, very important article. This is something that everyone at Black Talk Radio Network needs to know, is some more historical facts. And that's very, very important. It's there. It's talking about King Leopold III of Belgium. And if you know anything about Belgium to this day, it has some very, very embedded in the financial system, and it's actually a place where the governmental terrorism is financed and hubbed out of. Very, very important. It's a very small country, but this is where SWIFT account comes from, and a bunch of other financial giants that uphold the petrodollar, the reserve currency status that the U.S. dollar had at one time, is being dissolved as we speak. Very, very informative article. That's there, and it's take a look at this picture. Do you know who this is? Most people haven't heard of him. This is the article, but you should have. When you see his face or hear his name, you should get sick in your stomach. And when you read about Mussolini or Hitler, or see one of these or one of their pictures, you see he killed over 10 million people in the Congo. His name is King Leopold the Second of Belgium. He owned the Congo during the reign in which the constitutional monarch of Belgium, after several failed colonized attempts in Asia and Africa, he settled on Congo. He brought its slavery and enslaved the people, turning the entire country into his own personal slave plantation. So this is something that you all need to know about. I know Brother Braggs is very, very attuned to this and very, very aware of this. I think Brother Braggs sent me this a while ago, but just thought it was appropriate to post it now just because of the times that we're in. So check out that article. Very, very good historical facts, so that no one can deceive you about the true nature of some of the entities that continue to rule, that we give authority to. So very, very important article that's there. Check check that one out. Next one, Virginia becomes the first state to end veteran homelessness. And this comes from trueactivist.com. Good article. Check that one out. And this is something that is spreading, you know, is also from trueactivist.com. But this is a very, very important article as to what's going on in the country. Here's what the article says. It says, Virginia becomes the first U.S. state to end veterans homelessness. And this was on the 16th that it came out. While Connecticut was the first state to end chronic veteran homelessness, Virginia is officially now the first state to end all veteran homelessness. In a monumental achievement, indeed, as of Wednesday, the state of Virginia has officially ended chronic veteran homelessness, stating the governor, Terry McAuliffe, according to the Huffington Post. The milestone declared means that every veteran in the state has housing, except for those who are offered shelter but declined. The state press release shared that by streaming resources and having the Department of Veterans Affairs, public housing groups, local utility companies, and other key partners collaborate on the consortium, Virginia has become, will be able to house 1,432 veterans since October 2014. The state will need to maintain its status, but Virginia has a plan to secure a home for a veteran within 90 days upon finding out that they are homeless. The state will also have more homes readily available than the number of veterans without shelters to prevent the issue of preventing itself again. Really good article, and it's about time that they are starting to do some things for the very people that they deceived, destroyed in so many ways. And this is something that should not just be in one state. It actually should be something that is mandated throughout the whole country. So, in my opinion. So, good article that's there. Check that out. And if you know anyone that's in Virginia that is having a hard time, let them know about this so that they can receive the proper assistance that's needed, especially if they're a veteran and they're homeless. Please. Reach out and let them know, but you know, if you can do that. Next, we have very important article. Talk about that one. Oh, this one, my man Big Mo sent this to me. I saw it when it first came out. Very, very good article. But then Mo sent it to me, so I said, okay, yeah, I got to remember to post that one. Really good article. This comes from RT, and it's a discussion about Paris and with RT in there. The political commentator that's there totally destroys the whole story that's being told to the world about Paris, ISIS, and the advent of events that are happening. And it's a very, very, very good one, article that comes out, I mean, YouTube video or video that comes out of Russia Today. Very, very good. Check that one out. Next one. This is a very, very important article. Let me click on this one. And this one posted yesterday, and I wrote it in the caption. So they tell you after the fact that they knew the events were going to happen. The problem is easy hidden when it's presented as the solution. And what I meant by that is that they knew these things were going to happen, and they can easily hide the problem because they are the ones that's creating it. And they can be hide it as saying that they're creating the solution. Now, what is this article talking about? CIA Director John Brennan said West expected Paris attack. And this came from Bloomberg, I believe. So let me pull up this article. Very important that you hear what they're telling you, because they're setting the stage for some of the things that are going to continue to transpire and is going to spread and cross-pollinate to here. And this comes from Bloomberg News. The Islamic State is, one second, let me get rid of it. Here we go. The Islamic State is plotting more operations similar to the Paris attack, the CIA director said Monday, asserting that the Western governments and intelligence agencies are hampered in monitoring terrorist group suspects terrorist suspects and thawing plots. Director John Brennan told an audience at the Center for Strategic and International Studies that the world's intelligence community had been expecting attacks similar to those that struck Paris but were unable to stop the attacks Friday. He attributed the failure to new terrorist tactics, new technology that enabled the secret communications and several leaks of classified information that he said had hampered the government. It's not a surprise that the attacks were carried out from that standpoint of we did not have strategic warning. We knew that this type of plots were underway, looking at Europe in particular as the venue for those types of attacks. The Islamic State was planning the Paris attacks for several months as part of a series of attacks outside of the self-declared area. I certainly would not consider it one event, Brennan said. It is clear to me that ISIS is an external agenda that are determined to carry out these types of attacks. I would anticipate that this is not the only operation that ISIS has in the pipeline. So Brennan laid out several thoughts on how the Islamic State was able to carry out the Paris plot. He said that the sheer number of European citizens traveling to Iraq and Syria is overwhelming the European government's ability to screen travelers. He praised Britain's decision after the Paris attacks to add 1,500 intelligence professionals to the anti-terrorist rank. Let me just say this. This is what this is talking about. They basically said that they knew it was going to happen, and they tell you this after it happened. And they said that they were unable to, man, these are all lies. Because what they told you here was that they basically want to expand the overall abilities of the government by security level means from them. By adding 1,500 different intelligent agencies. That ensures that their business stays in business. And this is a problem. The very same people that are supposedly trying to defend and protect the people are probably the ones that are creating the environment by funding it, creating it, training the individuals, giving them different directions and orders, and then setting them out, and it's a big facade, of justice. There is nothing that these people didn't know about what was going on at all. And they failed to tell people because they want it to happen. Because from this, from out of the chaos, they established new order. Very, very telling article. Check it out. Need to know what is really going on. Another major article. This comes from who does this come from? J Post, and I think J Post is Jewish, the Jewish Post. Let me make sure. Yep, the Jerusalem Post. Very important article. Check this out. Spanish judge issues arrest warrant for Netanyahu, Lieberman, and others. Spain, in just the latest member of international community to accuse Israel of war crimes and pursue Israeli officials over the affair. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and seven other former and current government officials may be at risk of arrest over the 2010 flotilla debacle raid if they step foot in Spain's soils after a judge late last week drew up warrants. Others who might face arrest, including Foreign Minister Lieberman, current and former Defense Minister Meshaal Yain and Barak, respectively, and former Interior Minister and the former Intelligence Ministry Minister and a couple of others. Together with Netanyahu, they make up the so-called Forum of Seven and add a host of committees of ministers that had made key decisions in securing the issues at the time. Former head of the Navy and the top IFD commander running the operation at the time could also face arrest. We consider it, the judge ordered, to be a proactive If we are working with the Spanish authorities to get it canceled, we hope it will be over soon. Foreign Minister spokesperson Emmanuel Nashim said Saturday. The Prime Minister's Office and Justice Ministries has not responded by press time Sunday. In the 2010 incident, a group of human rights activists and a small group of IHH activists, which is a quasi-government commission reporting, identifying and affiliating with the Muslim Brotherhood, boarded several ships to try to break the Israeli blockade of the Gaza Strip. Israeli commanders stopped most of the ships without incidents, but the Israeli Navy commanders boarded the Mavin Maru. They were attacked by IH activists who wounded some commandos. The incidents left 10 dead on the IHH side. Spain is just one of the latest members of the international community to accuse Israel of war crimes and pursue Israeli officials over the affair. Very, very important. If you're not familiar with that, that's when the back in 2010, when the Israeli commando stormed the flotilla that was trying to break the Israeli blockade and bring aid to the Gaza Strip. And the commandos went on board and they just started shooting the people. They knew that they were not armed and they just started to blast. So Netanyahu has been brought up on war crimes and is subject to arrest if he ever goes to Spain, as well as many others in his cabinet. So just very important article for you guys to know. Next, last two. Here we go. Last two important ones. Sorry, Mike. Okay, this is really, really, this says a lot. Okay, this comes from CCN.LA. And it says, ISIS has Bitcoin wallet worth $3 million. Here it goes. Here's the article. Let's pull it down. 1 second, they put up some advertising. Can't see. All right. Here we go. The article says, following the recent attacks in Spain, an anonymous offshoot group, which actively hacks ISIL's efforts An anonymous offshoot, which actively hacks ISIS efforts worldwide, said that the ISIS regularly used cryptocurrencies to fund its operations. It offers evidence from September in which the group believed that it had uncovered a single address worth $3 million in Bitcoin, which would have appreciated significantly since then because Bitcoin had gone up. The group had a lot more to say during the interview with compelling outlets from news agencies who beat CCN to the scoop. The Islamic State does not use cryptocurrency of any form of income to fund their ongoing operations, and we have managed to uncover several Bitcoin addresses used by them. The Islamic State does use it. Nevertheless, the interview was completely evidence of that cryptocurrencies have perhaps better suited than anything to provide some degree of security, finality, integrity to the digital transaction. Most importantly, it believes that the current MERS that the Bitcoin could potentially become just another tool of the financial censorship. So they're basically saying that they're going to use this to censorship Bitcoin, but I'm going to say this. This is the thing with Bitcoin. Bitcoin was established and created by the bankers, and they are the biggest terrorists that this planet has ever had and ever will have. Of course, they're going to use a system that the terrorists have established. Bitcoin was established by the bankers years and years ago. It goes back to the 1800s and even the 1700s. It was something called a Bitcoin that they used to use. There's nothing new. And cryptocurrency is not new to Bitcoin being the first. Cryptocurrency has been around ever since that you've had a banking account. Anytime that you go to the bank and they give you a printout, you ask for your balance and they give you a balance, that's crypto currency. It's a digital form of currency. And the bankers want this to happen because what they're going to do is this is the excuse that you're going to hear in the future, that these institutions were hacked. And you're starting to hear that Anonymous is starting to reveal certain things about ISIL and all of this other stuff, and not even knowing who these people are. I'm going to tell you who these people are. Anonymous is just that, anonymous. They're anonymous to the individual hackers, to the big, the highest bidder, that they will do their deeds for them. They will hack the system and do whatever it is that they need to do based off what they were paid for. And the bankers themselves, the financial institutions, will easily just blame it on some group, ambiguous group, and say that it was them when it was actually their own efforts that were doing everything. And you're going to see that to start to play out. And you're going to see where they're going to start to bring some real instability to the financial market, because they've already stolen everything that you deposited into your bank account. And by way of cash deposits and by way of your 401ks and anything that's in the financial institution itself. No longer are you a depositor. So the Federal Insurance Corporation, FDIC, Federal Insurance Deposit Corporation, no longer applies to you. FDIC no longer applies to you because you're no longer a depositor when it comes to a bank. You are now an investor, and that money, that cash which you deposit, has already been stolen, and now they just need the events to cover the theft that they've done. And this is one of the ways that they're going to do it. This is why they bought Bitcoin online. This is not some gaming person out of Japan and all of that other stuff. If you believe that, man, major, major trouble. So you're going to see this unfold even further, and we're going to talk about this later on next week after we talk with JW tomorrow. Then we're going to have a show just on what's really going on in the banking realm that you need to know. So very important article there. Check that one out. Really, really says a lot. And that was pretty much it for the articles. Oh, no, we got two more. That's really, really important. The director of FBI, this is kind of an old one, but it's important that we put this one back up. Director of the FBI admits spying on African Americans and Muslims from the sky. And you remember that balloon, that blimp that went rogue and was tearing up different places in Virginia and everything else? Well, that was one of the tools that they used for surveillance people. But here's the article. Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigations admitted to the White House committee that his agency spied on Ferguson protesters with aerial crafts because of the request from local law enforcement. You're right. classified his revelations by stating that the FBI does not fly planes around America looking down to see if someone might be doing something wrong. However, it was just that exactly what the FBI did at Ferguson. Because of this, the FBI did not obtain warrants before engaging because of a loophole in the process that rests on the notion that planes do not capture or record the contents of any communication on the ground. Okay, so this article tells you, and you need to know this, this is all a big, big setup. They've been doing this for a while. This is why it's so important that you don't, you got to be careful of groups that you involve yourself with. And it's so important that we learn how to become more asymmetrical in our approach. That's why today's show is about the art of war and how important that was, where Sun Tzu had told us in a book that's older than the Bible itself, how to wage and how to win in different offensives, that to carry out a winning strategy and a winning scheme. And it's so important that we know this because, believe me, all of the great military minds of the past had studied the art of war, and those that didn't were subject to losing to the art of war. And this is something within our community that we are not familiar with, that is not really pushed about, and it's so, so important that we do know the art of war, the old principal teachings of it, and then now we can revolutionize it and strengthen it even more. Because one of the things about the art of war is that it has some of our ancestral secrets that are tied into it, but they just won't tell you that. Listen, get ready to go to a commercial break. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, and we come back out of the break. We're going to finish this conversation on the relevance of the art of war and why it's so important. So give us a call if you'd like to get in on the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 641-715-3630-3660, and the participant code is 5490-32-POUND, and just hit star 61, and we'll definitely see that you're there, and we'll bring you up. So we're getting ready to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back in 1 minute and 2 seconds.
Thought about getting into podcasting but don't know where to start? Have something to say to the world but don't know how? The popularity of podcasts and internet radio streaming continues to grow with millions of people on the planet gaining internet connectivity through a multitude of devices. In the current media age, people can browse internet radio stations or listen to podcasts right from the dashboard of their cars. There are few barriers to anyone who wants to produce internet-based media. To encourage media production for Black people by Black people, if you are an independent Black media producer or want to become one, the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project is offering unlimited and unmetered podcast hosting services below industry pricing. Need more information about the industry and the technology? Find out how to create internet-based radio broadcasts and or podcasts at www.knowledgebase.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.knowledgebase.blacktalkradionetwork.com.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, David Wren, a.k.a. Dave from L.A. Sorry about that. Had to grab something to drink. Glad the commercial break came up. So, hey, I just want to really thank you all for listening. In today's show, we're going to be talking about the art of war. And it's so important that we actually engage in the art of war in so many ways. And it would behoove us to actually apply these principles so that we can facilitate the outcome that we want and that's, important to us. And some of the principles from the art of war are ancient teachings that come from Africa itself. And part of being a samurai, but part of being one of ancient teachings, a lot of them from China to Japan to all of the ancient arts, pulled a lot of the historical teachings from Africa themselves. In order for people to achieve great means within the arts, they had to have a black blood within them. A lot of people didn't know that from some of the ancient warriors from the samurai and some of that's something that's not really spoken of. And even though Sun Tzu was Chinese, their ancestral ties in that China has to Africa is probably one of the most suppressed in the world, because you can go pretty much anywhere in the world, but China has never really publicized their connection to Africa, but within the past 5 years, they started to admit and reveal some of their ancestral ties to Africa. I'm pretty sure it's for very political and strategical reasons, but it is starting to make itself known. One of the last countries to actually banish it and hide it is starting to publicize their connections to Africa. And I think that's a very, very important thing because the whole world is Africa. So, you know, there is no such thing as the melanin that they have of them not being black. It's, you know, a lot of people like to say that they're from they speak of their nationality before that they speak of their true nature. You know, what I mean by that is that you'll have people that are black from different parts of the country and you would ask them on different parts of the world, you would ask them, what are they? They won't even say that they're black. They would say they're whatever their country are, that they, of their origin, where they were born or where their birth certificate is derived out of or their place of birth. They will claim their place of birth and not even recognize that they are black themselves or publicize it or admit it. So that is something that's very, very, you know, disheartening. But hey, that's the truth. But the art of war is the masterful teaching of how you engage in an asymmetrical warfare so that you can position yourself to win. And so many of us don't know about the art of war and how popular it's been from this teaching. Even today, you can't graduate from any military school within the United States that's of the, you know, West Point or the academies that the military has without reading it. It's a must read. And like I said earlier, it's older than the Bible. It came about 2,500 years before or maybe 2,000 years, between 2,000 and 2,500 years before the writing of the Bible. So it's much, much older. And some of its principal teachings are fundamentally sound even to this day. So what we're going to do is we're going to jump into the art of war. Scotty, do me a favor. I made a mistake and said play the first 30 minutes, which if you would, just is not, you know, let's just play the whole, not the whole thing, but the first 60 minutes is what I meant to play. So that when we come back and then we can discuss why is this relevant now. And if you have any questions or comments after that about the art of war, definitely get in on the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032 pound, and just hit *61, and I will see you in queue and definitely bring you up. So this is the introduction to the art of war, and it's something that you should read yourself, but I want to make sure that we have it because it's some key things that we need to start to apply today for the circumstances that we're in if we want to really change the outcome of the past that we've had here in this country and for the generations to come. It is still a battlefield, and we have to master the art of war. So let's go to The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Translated by Lionel Giles. Chapter 1. Laying Plans. Sun Tzu said, "The art of war is of vital importance to the state. It is a matter of life and death, a road either to safety or to ruin. Hence, it is a subject of inquiry which can on no account be neglected." The art of war, then, is governed by five constant factors to be taken into account in one's deliberations when seeking to determine the conditions obtaining in the field. These are: 1. The moral law. 2. Heaven. 3. Earth. 4. The commander. 5. Method and discipline. The moral law causes the people to be in complete accord with their ruler, so that they will follow him regardless of their lives, undismayed by any danger. Heaven signifies night and day, cold and heat, times and seasons. Earth comprises distances, great and small, danger and security, open ground and narrow passes, the chances of life and death. The commander stands for the virtues of wisdom, sincerity, benevolence, courage, and strictness. By method and discipline are to be understood the marshalling of the army and its proper subdivisions, the graduations of rank among the officers, the maintenance of roads by which supplies may reach the army, and the control of military expenditure. These five heads should be familiar to every general. He who knows them will be victorious. He who knows them not will fail. Therefore, in your deliberations when seeking to determine the military conditions, let them be made the basis of a comparison in this wise. 1. Which of the two sovereigns is imbued with the moral law? 2. Which of the two generals has most ability? 3. With whom lie the advantages derived from heaven and earth? 4. On which side is discipline more rigorously enforced? 5. Which army is stronger? 6. On which side are officers and men more highly trained? 7. In which army is there the greater constancy both in reward and punishment? By means of these 7 considerations, I can forecast victory or defeat. The general that hearkens to my counsel and acts upon it will conquer. Let such a one be retained in command. The general that hearkens not to my counsel nor acts upon it will suffer defeat. Let such a one be dismissed. While heeding the profit of my counsel, avail yourself also of any helpful circumstances over and beyond the ordinary rules. According as circumstances are favorable, one should modify one's plans. All warfare is based on deception. Hence, when able to attack, we must seem unable. When using our forces, we must seem inactive. When we are near, we must make the enemy believe we are far away. When far away, we must make him believe we are near. Hold out baits to entice the enemy, feign disorder, and crush him. If he is secure at all points, be prepared for him. If he is in superior strength, evade him. If your opponent is of a choleric temper, seek to irritate him. Pretend to be weak, that he may grow arrogant. If he is taking his ease, give him no rest. If his forces are united, separate them. Attack him where he is unprepared. Appear where you are not expected. These military devices, leading to victory, must not be divulged beforehand. Now the general who wins a battle makes many calculations in his temple ere the battle is fought. The general who loses a battle makes but few calculations beforehand. Thus do many calculations lead to victory, and few calculations to defeat. How much more no calculation at all? It is by attention to this point that I can foresee who is likely to win or lose. Chapter 2. Waging War. Sun Tzu says, in the operations of war, where there are in the field 1,000 swift chariots, as many heavy chariots, and 100,000 mail-clad soldiers, with provisions enough to carry them 1,000 li, the expenditure at home and at the front, including entertainment of guests, small items such as glue and paint, and sums spent on chariots and armor, will reach the total of 1,000 ounces of silver per day. Such is the cost of raising an army of 100,000 men. When you engage in actual fighting, if victory is long in coming, then men's weapons will grow dull and their ardor will be damped. If you lay siege to a town, you will exhaust your strength. Again, if the campaign is protracted, the resources of the state will not be equal to the strain. Now, when your weapons are dulled, your ardor damped, your strength exhausted, and your treasure spent, other chieftains will spring up to take advantage of your extremity. then no man, however wise, will be able to avert the consequences that must ensue. Thus, though we have heard of stupid haste in war, cleverness has never been seen associated with long delays. There is no instance of a country having benefited from prolonged warfare. It is only one who is thoroughly acquainted with the evils of war that can thoroughly understand the profitable way of carrying it on. The skillful soldier does not raise a second levy, neither are his supply wagons loaded more than twice. Bring war material with you from home, but forage on the enemy. Thus the army will have food enough for its needs. Poverty of the state exchequer causes an army to be maintained by contributions from a distance. Contributing to maintain an army at a distance causes the people to be impoverished. On the other hand, the proximity of an army causes prices to go up, and high prices cause the people's substance to be drained away. When their substance is drained away, the peasantry will be afflicted by heavy exactions. With this loss of substance and exhaustion of strength, the homes of the people will be stripped bare and 3/10 of their income will be dissipated, while government expenses for broken chariots, worn-out horses, breastplates and helmets, bows and arrows, spears and shields, protective mantles, draft oxen and heavy wagons will amount to 4/10 of its total revenue. Hence, a wise general makes a point of foraging on the enemy. One cartload of enemy's provisions is equivalent to 20 of one's own, and likewise a single picul of his provender is equivalent to 20 from one's own store. Now, in order to kill the enemy, our men must be roused to anger. That there may be advantage from defeating the enemy, they must have their rewards. Therefore, in chariot fighting, when 10 or more chariots have been taken, those should be rewarded who took the first. Our own flags should be substituted for those of the enemy, and the chariots mingled and used in conjunction with ours. The captured soldiers should be kindly treated and kept. This is called using the conquered foe to augment one's own strength. In war, then, let your great object be victory, not lengthy campaigns. Thus it may be known that the leader of armies is the arbiter of the people's fate, the man on whom it depends whether the nation shall be in peace or in peril. Chapter 3. Attack by Stratagem. Sun Tzu said, "In the practical art of war, the best thing of all is to take the enemy's country whole and intact. To shatter and destroy it is not so good. So, too, it is better to recapture an army entire than to destroy it, to capture a regiment, a detachment, or a company entire than to destroy them. Hence, to fight and conquer in all your battles is not supreme excellence. Supreme excellence consists in breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting. Thus, the highest form of generalship is to balk the enemy's plans. The next best is to prevent the injunction of the enemy's forces. The next in order is to attack the enemy's army in the field, and the worst policy of all is to besiege walled cities." The rule is not to besiege walled cities if it can possibly be avoided. The preparation of mantlets, movable shelters, and various implements of war will take up 3 whole months, and the piling up of mounds over against the wall will take 3 months more. The general, unable to control his irritation, will launch his men to the assault like swarming ants, with the result that 1/3 of his men are slain while the town still remains untaken. Such are the disastrous effects of a siege. Therefore, the skillful leader subdues the enemy's troops without any fighting. He captures their cities without laying siege to them. He overthrows their kingdom without lengthy operations in the field. With his forces intact, he will dispute the mastery of the empire, and thus, without losing a man, his triumph will be complete. This is the method of attacking by stratagem. It is the rule in war, if our forces are 10 to the enemy's 1, to surround him, if 5 to 1, to attack him, if twice as numerous, to divide our army into 2. If equally matched, we can offer battle. If slightly inferior in numbers, we can avoid the enemy. If quite unequal in every way, we can flee from him. Hence, though an obstinate fight may be made by a small force, in the end it must be captured by the larger force. Now, the general is the bulwark of the state. If the bulwark is complete at all points, the state will be strong. If the bulwark is defective, the state will be weak. There are 3 ways in which a ruler can bring misfortune upon his army. 1. By commanding the army to advance or to retreat, being ignorant of the fact that it cannot obey. This is called hobbling the army. 2. By attempting to govern an army in the same way as he administers a kingdom, being ignorant of the conditions which obtain in an army. This causes restlessness in the soldiers' minds. 3. By employing the officers of his army without discrimination, through ignorance of the military principle of adaptation to circumstances. This shakes the confidence of the soldiers. But when the army is restless and distrustful, trouble is sure to come from the other feudal princes. This is simply bringing anarchy into the army and flinging victory away. Thus, we may know that there are 5 essentials for victory. 1. He will win who knows when to fight and when not to fight. 2. He will win who knows how to handle both superior and inferior forces. 3. He will win whose army is animated by the same spirit throughout all its ranks. 4. He will win who, prepared himself, waits to take the enemy unprepared. 5. He will win who has military capacity and is not interfered with by the sovereign. Hence the saying, if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer a defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle. Chapter 4. Tactical Dispositions. Sun Tzu said, "The good fighters of old first put themselves beyond the possibility of defeat, and then waited for an opportunity of defeating the enemy. To secure ourselves against defeat lies in our own hands, but the opportunity of defeating the enemy is provided by the enemy himself. Thus the good fighter is able to secure himself against defeat, but cannot make certain of defeating the enemy. Hence the saying, one may know how to conquer without being able to do it." Security against defeat implies defensive tactics. Ability to defeat the enemy means taking the offensive. Standing on the defensive indicates insufficient strength. Attacking, a superabundance of strength. The general who is skilled in defense hides in the most secret recesses of the earth. He who is skilled in attack flashes forth from the topmost heights of heaven. Thus, on the one hand, we have the ability to protect ourselves, on the other, a victory that is complete. To see victory only when it is within the ken of the common herd is not the acme of excellence. Neither is it the acme of excellence if you fight and conquer, and the whole empire says, "Well done." To lift an autumn hare is no sign of great strength. To see the sun and moon is no sign of sharp sight. To hear the noise of thunder is no sign of a quick ear. What the ancients called a clever fighter is one who not only wins but excels in winning with ease. Hence his victories bring him neither reputation for wisdom nor credit for courage. He wins his battles by making no mistakes. Making no mistakes is what establishes the certainty of victory, for it means conquering an enemy that is already defeated. Hence, the skillful fighter puts himself into a position which makes defeat impossible and does not miss the moment for defeating the enemy. Thus it is that in war, the victorious strategist only seeks battle after the victory has been won, whereas he who is destined to defeat first fights and afterwards looks for victory. The consummate leader cultivates the moral law and strictly adheres to method and discipline. Thus it is in his power to control success. In respect of military method, we have firstly measurement, secondly estimation of quantity, thirdly calculation, fourthly balancing of chances, fifthly victory. Measurement owes its existence to earth, estimation of quantity to measurement, calculation to estimation of quantity, balancing of chances to calculation, and victory to balancing of chances. A victorious army opposed to a routed one is as a pound's weight placed in the scale against a single grain. The onrush of a conquering force is like the bursting of pent-up waters into a chasm 1,000 fathoms deep. Chapter 5. Energy. Sun Tzu said, "The control of a large force is the same principle as the control of a few men. It is merely a question of dividing up their numbers. Fighting with a large army under your command is nowise different from fighting with a small one. It is merely a question of instituting signs and signals. To ensure that your whole host may withstand the brunt of the enemy's attack and remain unshaken, this is effected by maneuvers direct and indirect, that the impact of your army may be like a grindstone dashed against an egg. This is affected by the science of weak points and strong. In all fighting, the direct method may be used for joining battle, but indirect methods will be needed in order to secure victory. Indirect tactics, efficiently applied, are inexhaustible as heaven and earth, unending as the flow of rivers and streams. Like the sun and moon, they end but to begin anew. Like the four seasons, they pass away to return once more. There are not more than 5 musical notes, yet the combination of these 5 give rise to more melodies than can ever be heard. There are not more than 5 primary colors, blue, yellow, red, white, and black, yet in combination they produce more hues than can ever be seen. There are not more than 5 cardinal tastes, sour, acrid, salt, sweet, bitter, yet combinations of them yield more flavors than can ever be tasted. In battle, there are not more than 2 methods of attack, the direct and the indirect. Yet these 2 in combination give rise to an endless series of maneuvers. The direct and the indirect lead on to each other in turn. It is like moving in a circle. You never come to an end. Who can exhaust the possibilities of their combination? The onset of troops is like the rush of a torrent, which will even roll stones along in its course. The quality of decision is like the well-timed swoop of a falcon, which enables it to strike and destroy its victim. Therefore, the good fighter will be terrible in his onset and prompt in his decision. Energy may be likened to the bending of a crossbow, decision to the releasing of a trigger. Amid the turmoil and tumult of battle, there may be seeming disorder and yet no real disorder at all. Amid confusion and chaos, your array may be without head or tail, yet it will be proof against defeat. Simulated disorder postulates perfect discipline. Simulated fear postulates courage. Simulated weakness postulates strength. Hiding order beneath the cloak of disorder is simply a question of subdivision. Concealing courage under a show of timidity presupposes a fund of latent energy. Masking strength with weakness is to be affected by tactical dispositions. Thus, one who is skillful at keeping the enemy on the move maintains deceitful appearances, according to which the enemy will act. He sacrifices something that the enemy may snatch at it. By holding out baits he keeps him on the march, then, with a body of picked men, he lies in wait for him. The clever combatant looks to the effect of combined energy, and does not require too much from individuals, hence his ability to pick out the right men and utilize combined energy. When he utilizes combined energy, his fighting men become, as it were, like unto rolling logs or stones, for it is the nature of a log or stone to remain motionless on level ground, and to move when on a slope, if four-cornered, to come to a standstill, but if round-shaped, to go rolling down. Thus the energy developed by good fighting men is as the momentum of a round stone rolled down a mountain thousands of feet in height. So much on the subject of energy. Chapter 6. Weak Points and Strong. Sun Tzu said, "Whoever is first in the field and awaits the coming of the enemy will be fresh for the fight. Whoever is second in the field and has to hasten to battle will arrive exhausted." Therefore, the clever combatant imposes his will on the enemy, but does not allow the enemy's will to be imposed on him. By holding out advantages to him, he can cause the enemy to approach of his own accord, or by inflicting damage, he can make it impossible for the enemy to draw near. If the enemy is taking his ease, he can harass him. If he is well supplied with food, he can starve him out. If quietly encamped, he can force him to move. Appear at points which the enemy must hasten to defend. March swiftly to places where you are not expected. An army may march great distances without distress if it marches through country where the enemy is not. You can be sure of succeeding in your attacks if you only attack places which are undefended. You can ensure the safety of your defense if you only hold positions that cannot be attacked. Hence, that general is skillful in attack whose opponent does not know what to defend, and he is skillful in defense whose opponent does not know what to attack. O divine art of subtlety and secrecy! Through you we learn to be invisible, through you inaudible, and hence we can hold the enemy's fate in our hands. You may advance and be absolutely irresistible if you make for the enemy's weak points. You may retire and be safe from pursuit if your movements are more rapid than those of the enemy. If we wish to fight, the enemy can be forced to an engagement even though he be sheltered behind a high rampart and a deep ditch. All we need do is attack some other place that he will be obliged to relieve. If we do not wish to fight, we can prevent the enemy from engaging us even though the lines of our encampment be merely traced out on the ground. All we need do is to throw something odd and unaccountable in his way. By discovering the enemy's dispositions and remaining invisible ourselves, we can keep our forces concentrated while the enemy's must be divided. We can form a single united body, while the enemy must split up into fractions. Hence there will be a whole pitted against several parts of a whole, which means that we shall be many to the enemy's few. And if we are able thus to attack an inferior force with a superior one, our opponents will be in dire straits. The spot where we intend to fight must not be made known, for then the enemy will have to prepare against a possible attack at several different points, and his forces being thus distributed in many directions, the numbers we shall have to face at any given point will be proportionately few. For should the enemy strengthen his van, he will weaken his rear. Should he strengthen his rear, he will weaken his van. Should he strengthen his left, he will weaken his right. Should he strengthen his right, he will weaken his left. If he sends reinforcements everywhere, he will everywhere be weak. Numerical weakness comes from having to prepare against possible attacks. Numerical strength from compelling our adversary to make these preparations against us. Knowing the place and the time of the coming battle, we may concentrate from the greatest distances in order to fight. But if neither time nor place be known, then the left wing will be impotent to succor the right equally impotent to succor the left, the van unable to relieve the rear, or the rear to support the van. How much more so if the furthest portions of the army are anything under 100 li apart, and even the nearest are separated by several li? Though, according to my estimate, the soldiers of Hue exceed our own in number, that shall advantage them nothing in the matter of victory. I say, then, that victory can be achieved. Though the enemy be stronger in numbers, we may prevent him from fighting. Scheme so as to discover his plans and the likelihood of their success. Rouse him and learn the principle of his activity or inactivity. Force him to reveal himself so as to find out his vulnerable spots. Carefully compare the opposing army with your own, so that you may know where strength is superabundant and where it is deficient. In making tactical dispositions, the highest pitch you can attain is to conceal them. Conceal your dispositions, and you will be safe from the prying of the subtlest spies, from the machinations of the wisest brains. How victory may be produced for them out of the enemy's own tactics, that is what the multitude cannot comprehend. All men can see the tactics whereby I conquer, but what none can see is the strategy out of which victory is evolved. Do not repeat the tactics which have gained you one victory, but let your methods be regulated by the infinite variety of circumstances. Military tactics are like unto water, for water in its natural course runs away from high places and hastens downwards. So, in war, the way is to avoid what is strong and to strike at what is weak. Water shapes its course according to the nature of the ground over which it flows. The soldier works out his victory in relation to the foe whom he is facing. Therefore, just as water retains no constant shape, so in warfare there are no constant conditions. He who can modify his tactics in relation to his opponent, and thereby succeed in winning, may be called a heaven-born captain. The five elements, water, fire, wood, metal, earth, are not always equally predominant. The four seasons make way for each in turn. There are short days and long. The moon has its periods of waning and waxing. Chapter 7. Maneuvering. Sun Tzu said, "In war, the general receives his commands from the sovereign." Having collected an army and concentrated his forces, he must blend and harmonize the different elements thereof before pitching his camp. After that comes tactical maneuvering, than which there is nothing more difficult. The difficulty of tactical maneuvering consists in turning the devious into the direct and misfortune into gain. Thus, to take a long and circuitous route, after enticing the enemy out of the way, and though starting after him, to contrive to reach the goal before him, shows knowledge of the artifice of deviation. Maneuvering with an army is advantageous, with an undisciplined multitude, most dangerous. If you set a fully equipped army in march in order to snatch an advantage, the chances are that you will be too late. On the other hand, to detach a flying column for the purpose involves the sacrifice of its baggage and stores. Thus, if you order your men to roll up their buff coats and make forced marches without halting day or night, covering double the usual distance at a stretch, doing 100 li in order to wrest an advantage, the leaders of all your three divisions will fall into the hands of the enemy. The stronger men will be in front, the jaded ones will fall behind, and on this plan only 1/10 of your army will reach its destination. If you march 50 li in order to outmaneuver the enemy, you will lose the leader of your first division, and only half your force will reach the goal. If you march 30 li with the same object, 2/3 of your army will arrive. We will take it, then, that an army without its baggage train is lost. Without provisions, it is lost. Without bases of supply, it is lost. We cannot enter into alliances until we are acquainted with the designs of our neighbors. We are not fit to lead an army on the march unless we are familiar with the face of the country, its mountains and forests, its pitfalls and precipices, its marshes and swamps. We shall be unable to turn natural advantage to account unless we make use of local guides. In war, practice dissimulation, and you will succeed. Whether to concentrate or to divide your troops must be decided by circumstances. Let your rapidity be that of the wind, your compactness that of the forest. In raiding and plundering, be like fire. In immovability, like a mountain. Let your plans be dark and impenetrable as night, and when you move, fall like a thunderbolt. When you plunder a countryside, let the spoil be divided amongst your men. When you capture new territory, cut it up into allotments for the benefit of the soldiery. Ponder and deliberate before you make a move. He will conquer who has learnt the artifice of deviation. Such is the art of maneuvering. The Book of Army Management says, on the field of battle the spoken word does not carry far enough, hence the institution of gongs and drums. Nor can ordinary objects be seen clearly enough, hence the institution of banners and flags. Gongs and drums, banners and flags, are means whereby the ears and eyes of the host may be focused on one particular point. The host, thus forming a single united body, it is impossible either for the brave to advance alone, or for the cowardly to retreat alone. This is the art of handling large masses of men. In night fighting, then, make much use of signal fires and drums, and in fighting by day, of flags and banners, as a means of influencing the ears and eyes of your army. A whole army may be robbed of its spirit. A commander-in-chief may be robbed of his presence of mind. Now, a soldier's spirit is keenest in the morning. By noonday it has begun to flag, and in the evening his mind is bent only on returning to camp. A clever general, therefore, avoids an army when its spirit is keen, but attacks it when it is sluggish and inclined to return. This is the art of studying moods. Disciplined and calm, to await the appearance of disorder and hubbub amongst the enemy, this is the art of retaining self-possession. To be near the goal while the enemy is still far from it, to wait at ease while the enemy is toiling and struggling, to be well fed while the enemy is famished, this is the art of husbanding one's strength. To refrain from intercepting an enemy whose banners are in perfect order, to refrain from attacking an army drawn up in calm and confident array, this is the art of studying circumstances. It is a military axiom not to advance uphill against the enemy, nor to oppose him when he comes downhill. Do not pursue an enemy who simulates flight. Do not attack soldiers whose temper is keen. Do not swallow bait offered by the enemy. Do not interfere with an army that is returning home. When you surround an army, leave an outlet free. Do not press a desperate foe too hard. Such is the art of warfare. Chapter 8. Variation in Tactics. Sun Tzu said, in war, the general receives his commands from the sovereign, collects his army, and concentrates his forces. When in difficult country, do not encamp. In country where high roads intersect, join hands with your allies. Do not linger in dangerously isolated positions. In hemmed-in situations, you must resort to stratagem. In desperate position, you must fight. There are roads which must not be followed, armies which must be not attacked, towns which must not be besieged, positions which must not be contested, commands of the sovereign which must not be obeyed. The general who thoroughly understands the advantages that accompany variation of tactics knows how to handle his troops. The general who does not understand these may be well acquainted with the configuration of the country, yet he will not be able to turn his knowledge to practical account. So the student of war, who is unversed in the art of war of varying his plans, even though he be acquainted with the five advantages, will fail to make the best use of his men. Hence the wise leader's plans, considerations of advantage and of disadvantage, will be blended together. If our expectation of advantage be tempered in this way, we may succeed in accomplishing the essential part of our schemes. If, on the other hand, in the midst of difficulties we are always ready to seize an advantage, we may extricate ourselves from misfortune. Reduce the hostile chiefs by inflicting damage on them, and make trouble for them, and keep them constantly engaged. Hold out specious allurements, and make them rush to any given point. The art of war teaches us to rely not on the likelihood of the enemy's not coming, but on our own readiness to receive him, not on the chance of his not attacking, but rather on the fact that we have made our position unassailable. There are five dangerous faults which may affect a general. 1. Recklessness which leads to destruction. 2. Cowardice which leads to capture. 3. A hasty temper which can be provoked by insults. 4. A delicacy of honor which is sensitive to shame. 5. Over-solicitude for his men, which exposes him to worry and trouble. These are the five besetting sins of a general, ruinous to the conduct of war. When an army is overthrown and its leader slain, the cause will surely be found among these five dangerous faults. Let them be the subject of meditation. Chapter 9. The Army on the March. Sun Tzu said, "We come now to the question of encamping the army and observing signs of the enemy. Pass quickly over mountains and keep in the neighborhood of valleys. Camp in high places facing the sun. Do not climb heights in order to fight." So much for mountain warfare. After crossing a river, you should get far away from it. When an invading force crosses a river in its onward march, do not advance to meet it in midstream. It will be best to let half the army get across and then deliver your attack. If you are anxious to fight, you should not go to meet the invader near a river which he has to cross. Moor your craft higher up than the enemy and facing the sun. Do not move upstream to meet the enemy. So much for river warfare. In crossing salt marshes, your sole concern should be to get over them quickly without any delay. If forced to fight in a salt marsh, you should have water and grass near you, and get your back to a clump of trees. So much for operations in salt marshes. In dry, level country, take up an easily accessible position with rising ground to your right and on your rear, so that the danger may be in front and safely lie behind. So much for campaigning in flat country. There are four useful branches of military knowledge which enabled the Yellow Emperor to vanquish four several sovereigns. All armies prefer high ground to low and sunny places to dark. If you are careful of your men and camp on hard ground, the army will be free from disease of every kind, and this will spell victory. When you come to a hill or a bank, occupy the sunny side with a slope on your right rear. Thus, you will at once act for the benefit of your soldiers and utilize the natural advantages of the ground. When, in consequence of heavy rains upcountry, a river which you wish to ford is swollen and flecked with foam, you must wait until it subsides. Country in which there are precipitous cliffs, with torrents running between, deep natural hollows, confined places, tangled thickets, quagmires and crevasses, should be left with all possible speed, and not approached. While we keep away from such places, we should get the enemy to approach them. While we face them, we should let the enemy have them on his rear. If in the neighborhood of your camp there should be any hilly country, ponds surrounded by aquatic grass, hollow basins filled with reeds or woods with thick undergrowth, they must be carefully routed out and searched, for these are places where men in ambush and insidious spies are likely to be lurking. When the enemy is close at hand and remains quiet, he is relying on the natural strength of his position. When he keeps aloof and tries to provoke a battle, he is anxious for the other side to advance. If his place of encampment is easy of access, he is tendering a bait. Movement amongst the trees of a forest shows that the enemy is advancing. The appearance of a number of screens in the midst of thick grass means that the enemy wants to make us suspicious. The rising of birds in their flight is the sign of an ambuscade. Startled beasts indicate that a sudden attack is coming. When there is dust rising in a high column, it is the sign of chariots advancing. When the dust is low but spread over a wide area, it betokens the approach of infantry. When it branches out in different directions, it shows that parties have been sent to collect firewood. A few clouds of dust moving to and fro signify that the army is encamping. Humble words and increased preparations are signs that the enemy is about to advance. Violent language and driving forward as if to attack are signs that he will retreat. When the light chariots come out first and take up position on the wings, it is a sign that the enemy is forming for battle. Peace proposals unaccompanied by a sworn covenant indicate a plot. When there is much running about and the soldiers fall into rank, it means that the critical moment has come. When some are seen advancing and some retreating, it is a lure. When the soldiers stand leaning on their spears, they are faint from want of food. If those who are sent to draw water begin by drinking themselves, the army is suffering from thirst. If the enemy sees an advantage to be gained and makes no effort to secure it, the soldiers are exhausted. If birds gather on any spot, it is unoccupied. Clamor by night betokens nervousness. If there is disturbance in the camp, the general's authority is weak. If the banners and flags are shifted about, sedition is afoot. If the officers are angry, it means that the men are weary. When an army feeds its horses with grain and kills its cattle for food, and when the men do not hang their cooking pots over the campfires, showing that they will not return to their tents, you may know that they are determined to fight to the death. The sight of men whispering together in small knots or speaking in subdued tones points to disaffection amongst the rank and file. Two frequent rewards signify that the enemy is at the end of his resources. Too many punishments betray a condition of dire distress. To begin by bluster, but afterwards to take fright at the enemy's numbers, shows a supreme lack of intelligence. When envoys are sent with compliments in their mouths, it is a sign that the enemy wishes for a truce. If the enemy's troops march up angrily and remain facing ours for a long time without either joining battle or taking themselves off again, the situation is one that demands great vigilance and circumspection. If our troops are no more in number than the enemy, that is amply sufficient. It only means that no direct attack can be made. What we can do is simply to concentrate all our available strength, keep a close watch on the enemy, and obtain reinforcements. He who exercises no forethought but makes light of his opponents is sure to be captured by them. If soldiers are punished before they have grown attached to you, they will not prove submissive, and unless submissive, then will be practically useless. If, when soldiers have become attached to you, punishments are not enforced, they will still be useless. Therefore, soldiers must be treated in the first instance with humanity, but kept under control by means of iron discipline. This is a certain road to victory. If in training soldiers commands are habitually enforced, the army will be well disciplined. If not, its discipline will be bad. If a general shows confidence in his men but always insists on his orders being obeyed, the gain will be mutual. Chapter 10. Terrain. Sun Tzu said, "We may distinguish 6 kinds of terrain, to wit, 1. Accessible ground, 2. Entangling ground, 3. Temporizing ground, 4. Narrow passes, 5. Precipitous heights, 6. Positions at a great distance from the enemy. Ground which can be freely traversed by both sides is called accessible. With regard to ground of this nature, be before the enemy in occupying the raised and sunny spots, and carefully guard your lines of supplies. Then you will be able to fight with advantage. Ground which can be abandoned but is hard to reoccupy is called entangling. From a position of this sort, if the enemy is unprepared, you may sally forth and defeat him. But if the enemy is prepared for your coming and you fail to defeat him, then, return being impossible, disaster will ensue. When the position is such that neither side will gain by making the first move, it is called temporizing ground. In a position of this sort, even though the enemy should offer us an attractive bait, it will be advisable not to stir forth, but rather to retreat, thus enticing the enemy in his turn. Then, when part of his army has come out, we may deliver our attack with advantage. With regard to narrow passes, if you can occupy them first, let them be strongly garrisoned and await the advent of the enemy. Should the army forestall you in occupying a pass, do not go after him if the pass is fully garrisoned, but only if it is weakly garrisoned. With regard to precipitous heights, if you are beforehand with your adversary, you should occupy the raised and sunny spots and there wait for him to come up. If the enemy has occupied them before you, do not follow him, but retreat and try to entice him away. If you are situated at a great distance from the enemy, and the strength of the two armies is equal, it is not easy to provoke a battle, and fighting will be to your disadvantage. These 6 are the principles connected with earth. The general who has attained a responsible post must be careful to study them. Now, an army is exposed to 6 several calamities, not arising from natural causes, but from faults for which the general is responsible. These are 1. Flight, 2. Insubordination, 3. Collapse, 4. Ruin, 5. Disorganization, 6. Rout. Other conditions being equal, if one force is hurled against another 10 times its size, the results will be the flight of the former. When the common soldiers are too strong and their officers too weak, the result is insubordination. When the officers are too strong and the common soldiers too weak, the result is collapse. When the higher officers are angry and insubordinate, and on meeting the enemy give battle on their own account from a feeling of resentment, before the commander-in-chief can tell whether or not he is in a position to fight, the result is ruin. When the general is weak and without authority, when his orders are not clear and distinct, when there are no fixed duties assigned to officers and men, and the ranks are formed in a slovenly, haphazard manner, the result is utter disorganization. When a general, unable to estimate the enemy's strength, allows an inferior force to engage a larger one, or hurls a weak detachment against a powerful one, and neglects to place picked soldiers in the front rank, the result must be rout. There are six ways of courting defeat, which must be carefully noted by the general who has attained a responsible post. The natural formation of the country is the soldier's best ally, but a power of estimating the adversary, of controlling the force of victory, and of shrewdly calculating difficulties, dangers, and distances, constitutes the test of a great general. He who knows these things, and in fighting, puts his knowledge into practice, will win his battles. He who knows them not, nor practices them, will surely be defeated. If fighting is sure to result in victory, then you must fight, even though the ruler forbid it. If fighting will not result in victory, then you must not fight, even at the ruler's bidding. The general who advances without coveting fame and retreats without fearing disgrace, whose only thought is to protect his country and do good service for his sovereign, is the jewel of the kingdom. Regard your soldiers as your children, and they will follow you into the deepest valleys. Look upon them as your own beloved sons, and they will stand by you even unto death. If, however, you are indulgent but unable to make your authority felt, kind-hearted but unable to enforce your commands, and incapable, moreover, of quelling disorder, then your soldiers must be likened to spoilt children. They are useless for any practical purpose. If we know that our own men are in a condition to attack, but are unaware that the enemy is not open to attack, we have gone only halfway towards victory. If we know that the enemy is open to attack, but are unaware that our own men are not in condition to attack, we have gone only halfway towards victory. If we know that the enemy is open to attack, and also know that our men are in a condition to attack, but are unaware that the nature of the ground makes fighting impracticable, we have still gone only halfway towards victory. Hence the experienced soldier, once in motion, is never bewildered. Once he has broken camp, he is never at a loss. Hence the saying, if you know the enemy and know yourself, your victory will not stand in doubt. If you know heaven and know earth, you may make your victory complete. Chapter 11. The Nine Situations. Sun Tzu said, the art of war recognizes nine varieties of ground: dispersive ground, facile ground, contentious ground, open ground, ground of intersecting highways, serious ground, difficult ground, hemmed-in ground, desperate ground. When a chieftain is fighting in his own territory, it is dispersive ground. When he has penetrated into hostile territory, but to no great distance, it is facile ground. Ground, the possession of which imports great advantage to either side, is contentious ground. Ground on which each side has liberty of movement is open ground. Ground which forms the key to three contiguous states, so that he who occupies it first has most of the empire at his command, is a ground of intersecting highways. When an army has penetrated into the heart of a hostile country, leaving a number of fortified cities in its rear, it is serious ground. Mountain forests, rugged steeps, marshes, and fens, all country that is hard to traverse, this is difficult ground. Ground which is reached through narrow gorges and from which we can only retire by torturous paths, so that a small number of the enemy would suffice to crush a large body of our men, this is hemmed-in ground. Ground on which we can only be saved from destruction by fighting without delay is desperate ground. On dispersive ground, therefore, fight not. On facile ground, halt not. On contentious ground, attack not. On open ground, do not try to block the enemy's way. On the ground of intersecting highways, join hands with your allies. On serious ground, gather in plunder. In difficult ground, keep steadily on the march. On hemmed-in ground, resort to stratagem. On desperate ground, fight. Those who were called skillful leaders of old knew how to drive a wedge between the enemy's front and rear, to prevent cooperation between his large and small divisions, to hinder the good troops from rescuing the bad, the officers from rallying their men. When the enemy's men were united, they managed to keep them in disorder. When it was to their advantage, they made a forward move. When otherwise, they stopped still. If asked how to cope with a great host of the enemy in orderly array and on the point of marching to the attack, I should say, begin by seizing something which your opponent holds dear. Then he will be amenable to your will. Rapidity is the essence of war. Take advantage of the enemy's unreadiness. Make your way by unexpected routes and attack unguarded spots. The following are the principles to be observed by an invading force. The further you penetrate into a country, the greater will be the solidarity of your troops, and thus the defenders will not prevail against you. Make forays in fertile country in order to supply your army with food. Carefully study the well-being of your men and do not overtax them. Concentrate your energy and hoard your strength. Keep your army continually on the move and devise unfathomable plans. Throw your soldiers into positions whence there is no escape, and they will prefer death to flight. If they will face death, there is nothing they may not achieve. Officers and men alike will put forth their uttermost strength. Soldiers, when in desperate straits, lose the sense of fear. If there is no place of refuge, they will stand firm. If they are in hostile country, they will show a stubborn front. If there is no help for it, they will fight hard. Thus, without waiting to be marshaled, the soldiers will be constantly on the qui vive, without waiting to be asked, and they will do your will without restrictions. They will be faithful. Without giving orders, they can be trusted. Prohibit the taking of omens and do away with superstitious doubts. Then, until death itself comes, no calamity need be feared. If our soldiers are not overburdened with money, it is not because they have a distaste for riches. If their lives are not unduly long, it is not because they are disinclined to longevity. On the day they are ordered out to battle, your soldiers may weep, those sitting up bedewing their garments, and those lying down letting the tears run down their cheeks. But let them once be brought to bay, and they will display the courage of a Chu or Kuei. The skillful tactician may be likened to a Shuizhan. Now the Shuizhan is a snake that is found in the Chung Mountains. Strike at its head, and you will be attacked by its tail. Strike at its tail, and you will be attacked by its head. Strike at its middle, and you will be attacked by head and tail both. Asked if an army can be made to imitate the Shuizhan, I should answer yes. For the men of Wu and the men of Hui are enemies. Yet, if they are crossing a river in the same boat and are caught by a storm, they will come to each other's assistance, just as the left hand helps the right. Hence, it is not enough to put one's trust in the tethering of horses and the burying of chariot wheels in the ground. The principle on which to manage an army is to set up one standard of courage which all must reach. How to make the best of both strong and weak, that is a question involving the proper use of ground. Thus, the skillful general conducts his army just as though he were leading a single man, willy-nilly, by the hand. It is the business of a general.
All right, well, I'm going to go to a commercial
radio
break.
Show
listen
is
to
live
Nintendo
on
radio.
Black Talk Radio Network, Monday through Fridays at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Check Black Talk Radio Network on Facebook for updates. Also, don't forget to follow Tando Radio Show on Facebook as well. Have a question or comment for the host? Give us a call at 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. That's 549-032-POUND. To signal the host, hit *61. Now back to Tando Radio Show on the Black Talk Radio Network.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I want to thank you all for listening. That was The Art of War by Sun Tzu, and I hope that you enjoyed it. It's not over. We're going to play the rest of it later on next week, and we'll continue the video from yesterday also in a segment, because that's a very long one. So I hope you enjoyed that, because it's something that you really, really, I think that we really needed to hear and to actually know. If you were listening to it, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you about what you thought about The Art of War. Give us a call, 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032-POUND, and hit *61 to chime in. We'd love to hear from you. Jump in on the line, because it's so important that our people talk about this. Now, what I want to say is that if you were listening to The Art of War, now you have already heard how the U.S. has already been defeated. It already has. And not only that, you can actually see how we have been manipulated within our community and not even have known. And how our response has been a very, a response that was not going to bring about any victory from the past, from the past things that we've done. And we really need to understand the art of war, because its principles, even though it talks of an era and time that was a little different, if you can identify and you can correlate those times with the times that we're in now, you have the perfect blueprint for success. Because believe me, even though Sun Tzu was talking about the different times for his military, you can apply those conditions, and they are very extremely relative and apparent in today's world. And we need to really understand that, because it is an art of war that we're engaged in, and we've been fighting it from a position of disadvantage. And we need to change that as soon as possible. And one of the great things about it is that we have the ability to succeed and win in all forms. And one of the first things that we need to do in doing that is we need to prepare, to totally prepare. So if you have any questions or comments about it, definitely would love to hear from you. Give us a call, 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032-POUND, and hit *61, and I will see you in queue and bring you up. Now, some of the things that I want to bring to your attention that was said, it's so many things. Now, one of the things with the art of war is something that, what I do is that I've read and I listen to it. I read it one chapter at a time, or three or five pages at a time, and meditate on those for a week at a time. It's something that I've used that has been very beneficial to me. And it allows me to see different things, and then you can start to role play and place different conditions in your life from there, and it helps with so much. But now, one of the things that I want to say is that the art of war is so important, and we need to really familiarize ourselves, our family, and our community with it as much as possible. Now, one of the key things in some of the things that we're going to start to see unfold here that will be a threat to our community. One is we can't be led into battle from a position of weakness. And that is something that is being propagated and being done as we speak. You can see the forces are planning and preparing for a war, and we are not. And it's not just the physical one, but the one within the asymmetrical warfare that's being waged against our people, that maintains the overall enslavement of our people. because we haven't identified it that we are in a war, and we haven't properly trained on how to win the battle and ultimately win the war. We have allowed the overall narrative and the overall dictation and the overall agenda of the war that's being fought against us to be planned and strategized by people other than us. They tell us where to go, where to be, what to say, when to shout, when to scream, when to march, and when to lead. And one of the things that I hope that we notice through the art of war is that when the enemy is loud and boisterous, they are weak. When the enemy is humble and quiet, they are ready to attack. These are some of the principles of the art of war that have been so true. They've been so true. When we yell, scream, and do all of those other things, as soon as we are met with confrontation, we run. Because that is a human response to it all. Because we have not gone there other than just to holler and scream, and we have not gone to win a battle. We've not prepared for a battle. This is why the movements of the past have been quite disastrous in result. There were great organizations that were dutifully preparing the proper way, but there was one thing that was missing, was that the people didn't buy into it, so they were easily outnumbered. And there are so many organizations and so many movements that were the right kind that was not having the right support. It was trying to fight for a nation that wanted to sit down. That is why they failed. It wasn't that they failed. It was just that the people failed them. I like to put it this way. They expect you to treat them like Jesus while they kiss you like Judas. And until we understand that we are completely, every single one of us are in a battle, and there's a part that we have to play in that in order for us to survive and not to be complaining, petitioning, voting, marching, demanding with voice, that is from a failed state. A real state that has known victory does neither of those. What a victorious state does is it plans to win every battle it goes in through organization and be duly prepared for it. That way they don't petition, they create the agenda and the environment for the theater of operation. And they play the right instruments at the appropriate time. And they bring forth the right plot and the right scheme at the appropriate time. They are not following or led. They lead. They construct. They build. This is one of the things that has been a problem for us in the past. But it doesn't mean that it has to be our future. We really need to continue to prepare our people, our families, and prepare the people, because we are in a position where we can't lose if we do. Just think of how embedded we are in all aspects everywhere. Very key. Very, very key. In order to first protect our nation, we have to have people evenly dispersed and of even temperament and commitment to the overall cause. And what I mean by that, we have doctors that are in place that at the appropriate time could sabotage the wrongs that will be done by the medical institution. We have people in different places that have already infiltrated those places, and their infiltration is not known, but that at the appropriate time they can sabotage. This is the asymmetrical warfare that we have to understand. In order first to understand that, we have to practice the art of war and develop its tactics to revolutionize it for today's battlefield. And there's no greater people to do that than you. There's no greater cause, and there's no greater hour for that to be done than now. So, we really need to look at where we are, and we have to really smother the spirit of fear and understand that there is nothing that is going on right now that is in our best interest until we establish our own interest. And it's so, so important that we know these things and that we participate in these things. And I would say that the art of war has been around for a very long time. As I said before, it's older than the Bible itself. And those that practice it and master it increase the likelihood that they win. And if you look at some of the organizations that have practiced it, they have a winning track record. They have a track record of winning. But that doesn't mean that they continue to practice it, because they can get arrogant in their belief. They can start to think from a position of arrogance and develop an I problem. And from that I problem, they think that they're the greatest. I want to be like the Most High. I. And all they care about is themselves. And that is the first step to destruction. You know, if you look at that biblically, in Luke 12:20, where Jesus told the man he was foolish and he would have to he would be required of his soul because of his foolishness. And his foolishness was because of his pride of life. And what was that pride of life? The riches that the system had gave him caused him to be foolish to the intrinsical nature of the spirit world, in the spirit realm, and what is sustainable, impure, and moral. This is where we have to ensure that we walk away from. We've been inundated with the prides of life. We've been inundated with the I problem. I got to get over. All I care about is me. And we've forgotten the sustainability that is required in order for us to be victorious in all that we do. We've placed ourselves under the curse of defeat through fear, through comfort, and through being led and not leading. And when I mean leading, we don't need leaders. We need a leaderless movement of the people, because leaders can be compromised. Organizations can be infiltrated and led to slaughter. But when the people decide that they were moving in a collective direction and they energize that collective movement, there's nothing that can stop them. And I would say it's so, so important that we learn to practice the great art of war. But there is the great black art of war that is fundamentally sound and primary of nature. And it's still within us. And it's the only way, not going to be by decree of the government. It's not going to be by deed of the people that submitted themselves to the same former agenda to enslave them. There is no freedom from those that have enslaved. They will continue to hold the grip of enslavement over the people. And we can't take on their nature and take on their spirit. But, or else, what we have been victimized by, we will become. What we've had to overcome will become our existence, who we are. And that's what we have to avoid, because we are much greater nation than that. So, Today is Wednesday. Everyone, we're going to end the show a little bit early. Hope that you enjoyed The Art of War by Sun Tzu. But there is an art of war that we need to write, that we need to propagate, that we need to disseminate among the people, because the battlefield is real, but the tactics have to be aligned with our spirit and our nature, the great ancestral nature that we come from, not the defeated one that they try to write about in the history and try to really bond you with the defeat. And it's never, ever happened. And it can't happen any longer if we decide to walk away from it all. Everyone, hope you enjoyed the show. Much love, much respect. Tomorrow we will have JW on, and she is someone that is strategically grounded within the financial sector, has a lot of information. I believe that you will definitely enjoy this strong, powerful sister, and you need to hear from her. So, God willing, we will be back tomorrow. And remember, before you ask for a blessing, to be a blessing is never goodbye. It's always, I'll see you later. Finish The Art of War. Finish the Sun Tzu. We will finish it collectively together. Start telling people about The Art of War. Start telling people about Black Talk Radio Network. Start telling people about Tando Radio Show, because we have to prepare, because the order to execute has already been signed. Much love and much respect. God willing, we'll talk to you soon. Peace, 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 and love, love, love to you all.
Love is kind, love can give and get no gain. It's down the rugged road you've gone.